are coming down to the 16th bowl. Catholic Boy is pulling away. He's so impressive today, the others didn't even have a prayer. Catholic Boy rolls in the run. Happy Travers.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pinnell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga, just minutes from the track. The Leah Auto Group. To search their inventory, schedule a service appointment, or find a dealership near you, visit leahcars.com. Leah Cars for life. And Woodbine Racetrack. Pick, bet, and cheer on world-class horse racing north of the border.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Friday morning. Again, live from Saratoga. A lot of activity on Clare Court earlier this morning on a beautiful Friday morning. It promises to be a beautiful Friday afternoon. So if you have a plan to come to the track, today's a great day to do it. Coming up a little bit later on the show, Sean Smealy, Executive Director, Coalition for Horse Racing Integrity. We'll hear a little bit about their mission. Also a little bit later on, David O'Rourke, New York Racing Association CEO and President. We'll get kind of a halftime report on the Saratoga season so far. But happy to be joined top of the show by trainer John Kimmel. Nice little stakes win a couple of days ago. We'll talk about that and more. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. Our man Mick, who bops around during the meet and gets some B-roll footage of the place, said you have one of the nicest barns on the grounds, lots of flowers and everything. So talk a little bit about where you are and how long you've been there.
Well, I've been there about 25 years now. I basically started over on the Oklahoma in a very small barn. I came up with 9 horses. I was in New Jersey, and when I came up, we actually started out very well. I brought 9 horses up that season and won 6 races. So kind of got my name in the headlines a little bit, and one thing led to another. And actually, I've had some pretty good Saratoga meets over the years. I've won a meet here and lost a meet by one to Bill Mott, and it was due to a disqualification. I got taken down, and Bill got put up, and I lost by one. So.
Oh, so the guy you lost to also got...
And Saratoga's a special place for me. I've won my first Grade 1 races here. I won the test a couple times, the Gopher Wand. Used to be called the Phenomenon, the Forgo, the Adirondack a couple times, and... So Saratoga's been a special place for me, and I just really enjoy the environment here, the fans, and coming out to the races and seeing people in the stands. It's part what makes Saratoga so special.
Talk a little bit about how you got into the game.
Well, my father basically introduced me to the game. He was a pretty major owner. He actually bought a breeding farm in Lexington named High Point Farm, and he got introduced to the game by his father, and the story goes back into the late 30s and early 40s. My grandfather was a bookmaker here, and he before there was pari-mutuel wagering.
And so the chalkboard.
And they came up, and my father said he was 15. They rented a house on Union Avenue, and my dad wasn't even old enough to drive, but... my grandfather, Manny Kimmel, said, come on, nobody's going to check. So he would drive him to the races and drop him off at the front gate before the first. And then he took the car over to the Gideon Putnam and hung out at the pool. And then Grandpa said, pick me up after the last. And he said it was a great time up here. He made made a lot of money, like making book here in Saratoga when the stands were absolutely packed. And then my father, who was a very successful businessman, started Kinney Parking and was an executive vice president at Warner Communications, was in the game pretty heavily. He had a private trainer when I went to vet school. Jimmy Toner was his private trainer, and he started getting pretty big in the game and had lots of mares. And he started taking me to the track, and one thing led to another, and... I went to vet school with the idea of practicing veterinary medicine, but after about 8 years, I started training on my own and have been doing it now for almost 30 years.
Wasn't your dad, am I correct, wasn't he known for, he had some wacky names?
Well, that's an understatement. Yes, he's had some very controversial names over the years, which maybe might not be okay for TV, but yes, he was a real practical joker and had some very funny names over the years.
The one that every announcer must rue is Shiny City Shoes. I had to say it slowly.
Yes, then he had Flat Fleet Feet, and Durkin was classic when she won the Adirondack here. He said, "It's Flat Fleet Feet in front in the final furlong." So, yeah, Durkin and him had a little thing going. He was always trying to come up with names to slip up the announcers.
Yeah, I remember all of those over the years. You say you were a vet. How does that play into then translating over to a trainer? Is that a bonus, being a vet?
Well, obviously, the education you get and working with horses, there's such a close relationship in nowadays between sports and medicine that, you know, knowing something about medicine, anatomy, physiology, I use that information all the time in evaluating the horses and try to make sure that when we look at horses and see things that aren't right, to try to detect injuries in their early stages before they become career-threatening injuries. I think that's really, really important. And, you know, I'm a big advocate for health, welfare, and safety of the horse, and been involved with the AAEP and drafting the guidelines and the white paper documents and re-looking at everything that we could do to provide, you know, additional safety guards for our horses.
And I know you're on the board of the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, and certainly over the last 10 years or so, it's become an important issue. They're forefront now, aftercare and second careers as well.
Oh, for sure. You know, it's really taken on a major emphasis now in the industry to provide a means that these horses that are done with their racing careers have another place to go besides slaughter. And I think everybody's making a contribution, and I think it's going to improve as we go on.
Let's take a look. I mentioned it at the top of the interview, nice stakes race a couple of days ago in the Evan Shipman for the New York Breds. We're going to watch the stretch run here. Number two, Mr. Buff. Boy, he looked good. I mean, he just looked good in the paddock. It'll just look good, but on the racetrack, looked very good. Chart margin of 3.5 as the 3-5 favorite. His game plan is kind of go to the front end, and he was sitting a little in a stalking position early, but as we see here, took the lead and pulls away. What were your impressions of Mr. Buff in the Shipman a couple days ago?
Well, first of all, you know, he did look great in the paddock. I thought he came into the race in great order. He's a very big horse, as you can see how much bigger he is than the four horse here. He's a massive 17-2 horse and weighs in excess of 1,300 pounds. And as I was watching them in the gate, I was wondering why his nose looked like to be below the doors of the starting gate. And, you know, and then the jock got off him, and I go, what's going on? Well, to find out later, he had actually put his hind leg, his left hind leg, on top of the pontoon where the riders, I'm sorry, not the riders, where the assistant starters stand, and it got stuck up there. So his hind leg was stuck on there, and he was leaning forward trying to dislodge it, but they couldn't get it off. And Junior Alvarado told me they were very close to maybe even scratching him. So it actually took two starters. They took a strap, put it around his pastern of his hind leg. They pulled as hard as they could to get it up and disengaged and put his leg back down flat on the ground, at which time he was kind of confused what was going on. And he actually wasn't standing right when they sprung the latch, and he consequently missed the break. And for a horse that's been in front pretty much in most of his top performances, you know, he found himself in behind two horses, one on his shoulder and one in front. So I was quite concerned at that point, you know, what was going to happen, because when that's happened in the past, he really hasn't performed up to his potential. But, you know, he kind of sat there, found a little seam down the backside, got inside of Rosario and Seafoam, and, you know, the rest is kind of history.
Maybe a new dimension.
Yeah, it's nice to not have to be on the lead all the time.
How'd he come out of it? And what?
So far, he looks good. He goes back to the track tomorrow. I didn't see any signs of any muscle pulls or damage to any of his body parts. And so far at this point, the plan was to pass on the Whitney, and thinking that maybe some of those heavy head horses from out of town, i.e. McKenzie, might not come back again for the Woodward. So if he were to come out of this race in good order, I think we might pinpoint that race as his next start.
You're going to bring up a sore point. You mentioned the DQ that lost you a title a couple of years ago, and boy, you had a tough one a couple of days ago, a week or so ago here at the meet. Cristal,
yep,
we'll watch
that's her name.
Run here, Cristal. I want to watch the stretch run because it was a career debut, and we'll watch for her to come back next time. This was the career debut. Wins by a chart margin, 2.25, but winds up getting DQ'd. So, Cristal, talk about that one, and talk about. I'm guessing it's part of the game, and you have to kind of moderate your emotions on things like this, but boy, it's tough. 41-1, I believe.
41-1. I mean, I think there was a little bit of grandstanding on Jose Ortiz's part here. You know, his brother kind of bumps him a little bit there. This horse is obviously runs by them very fast. As a matter of fact, she's absolutely clear of him. Look, she's already passed him, and he goes to check. She's already passed him. There was no chance of any kind of contact, any clipping heels. The stewards looked at it differently than the way I see it, as well as anybody else that has contacted me. Thought it was a very frivolous foul. And, you know, if you look at the head-on, you can't tell exactly when it happens. But he was already clear of that horse before he took a hold of it. And anyway, the long and the short of it is, at this point, they took her down. She thinks she won, and we'll have to kind of figure out that she's a maiden winner. And I thought it was a very impressive last quarter. She ran the last quarter in 22-11.
It was clearly a nice performance by a debut runner. Is there time to maybe see her again at the meet?
Well, sure. I think I have to look at this is that she did break her maiden. I think she's been the most impressive two-year-old filly to run on the grass. So I think we look at maybe thinking that it was a win, and we go after some of the stakes quality races and see if she's got the potential to line up for a Breeders' Cup engagement later in the year. If she falls short, we can always go back to a maiden race.
Well, like the with anticipation. Is there a girls'
well,
version
the girls,
of with
the girls' division is called the P.G. Johnson.
Right.
But there's some other races around the country. There's a Win and You're In September 15th at Woodbine called the Natalma.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, at this point, it's basically 2-year-olds that have broke their maidens. So it's for a grade one race. It's going to be, you know, just a bunch of fillies that broke their maidens.
We're usually up there that weekend, so maybe we'll see you and root for you up there as well. Let's just, before we let you get a couple ideas over the next couple of days. This afternoon, third race, Willing to Speed in the starter 50, mile and 16th on the grass. Your thoughts on Willing to Speed?
He's been knocking on the door. He had a kind of a tough trip last time. He was second three times, I believe, in this category. I made a pilot change and put IRAD on it, and he found more trouble than Murad did. And then he jumped ship on me, even though the jock said, really, you know, he'll beat these horses. But the agent felt that he had a horse that might be a better mount for him. So I let him off, and I put Raj back on. And Raj had a nice win yesterday, and hopefully he can kind of get his game going. But I think the horse, as well as the rider, and are all doing really well, and I'm expecting a good run out of him today.
Another first-time starter tomorrow in the fifth race, maiden special weight, Famished by Uncle Mo, $375,000 purchase in May at the Fasig Tipton sale. What are your thoughts on Famished tomorrow in the fifth?
I love this horse. It's a loaded 2-year-old race.
Saturday.
You know, anything can happen. He's not really the quickest gate horse, so I'm sure he'll get outfooted the first quarter. But this is a very, very special horse for me and my best estimations. And he worked with Cristal a couple times, and even though it was on the dirt, he was very much easy for him to work outwork her in the mornings. So I know you're talking two different surfaces, and sometimes it's hard to compare, but that was one of the reasons I switched her over to the grass, because he basically played with her when they worked together. And he's a beautiful made horse. He's a nice sound horse. He's got a good mind. And, you know, I'll be interested to see. I think that race will probably have two or three good stake horses come out of that race. And the other division, they tell me there's a couple bears in there, including that horse Godzilla of the Flatter colt. So anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing him run. I hope he makes my enthusiasm justified.
2-year-olds at Saratoga on Saturday, always tough spots, but we wish you a lot of luck, and certainly congratulations again. Nice performance by Mr. Buff. Maybe we'll look for him at the end of the meet in the Woodward. And again, look forward to maybe seeing you up at the Woodbine and then the Natalma as well.
Yeah, that might be a place we could meet up again.
Absolutely.
All right.
John Kimmel, again, continued good luck at the meet and beyond.
Beyond. Take care. Thanks, Seth.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, more on this Friday edition of Racing Across America. Stay tuned. Thanks.
Appreciate it.
That was great.
Free money? Well, Capital OTB gives its players plenty of opportunities to cash in. At Capital OTB, there are so many ways for horse players to receive bonus dollars by simply participating in promotions such as our bankrolls, bounty bets, online handicapping contest, and much, much more. Plus, with Capital OTB's player rewards program, you get actual cash back. So what are you waiting for? Log on today at CapitalOTB.com or CapitalOTBBet.com and claim your free money.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Again, thanks to John Kimmel. He was on his way over to the turf course. Those turf works, you got to get them in when they give you the chance. He had a horse working at 10:30, so we appreciate him coming in for the 10 to 10:15 segment. Now we're going to preview a little bit of Arlington tomorrow, because, again, Arlington Million Day, that'll be part of also the Saratoga Live broadcast on Fox MSG, and offers a lot of opportunities wagering-wise that are annually very intriguing. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Bottom of the hour, David O'Rourke from the New York Racing Association. Again, a little bit later on, Sean Smealy, Executive Director, Coalition for Horse Racing Integrity. He was part of that presser the other day over at the race course with Paul Tonko, talking about his horse racing integrity bill. So we'll get some updates on that also. But as I say, in this segment, wanted to jump in and talk a little bit about what's coming up in Chicago tomorrow. Arlington Million Day, you know, annually one of the big days on the racing calendar. And let's take a look first at what's coming up in the Arlington Million itself. Grade 1 event, and as the title indicates, $1 million up for grabs, mile and a quarter on the grass. Fun field. I mean, we have last year's winner in here for Chad Brown, Robert Bruce, comes in off a second-place finish in the Manhattan. Second place finish too, Bricks and Mortar, who probably has a little bit of an edge in here, but Magic Wand, a couple starts back, good second in a grade one, group one over in Europe. Last time, well beaten by Enable. Bricks and Mortar also in here. Hunting Horn, who in the last two starts has been behind Enable, has started in this country already this season, ran fourth, pretty good fourth in the Man of War. Last year, an eighth-place finish in the Breeders' Cup turf, though. Again, maybe signals, you know, it used to be the Europeans coming over were kind of like a given. You went right in that direction. Maybe not so much as in prior years. And one of the reasons for that, the horse I mentioned earlier. We're going to take a look here at the Manhattan from June 8th. And Bricks and Mortar the winner, Robert Bruce second. Bricks and Mortar is going to be the number 8 horse in here. Robert Bruce, the number 3, runs second. And again, they're both in on Saturday in the Arlington Million. And Chad's Bricks and Mortar just looks, boy, I mean, again, you used to always tilt towards the Europeans, but the way this horse is running this year, he just kind of dominates, despite some nice Europeans coming over for Aidan O'Brien and others. Bricks and Mortar, that win was very nice. The win just before in the Turf Classic down at Churchill, the Munoz at Fairgrounds. And the Munoz win and the Turf Classic at Churchill, both, it was like the horse knew where the finish line was and just got up in those two races. It was kind of a heart-stopping scenario that you thought might be building up for him this season. But as you saw there in the Manhattan, managed to kind of comfortably get it by a chart margin of over a length. And so just coming in good form. 4 starts this year, 4 wins after a little bit of an abbreviated 2018 season, which really was more the beginning of the 2019 season. Had been off from October 2017 until late December of last year. And as I say, it really wasn't a 2018 so much as it kicked off the 2019 season. A little optional claimer down at Gulfstream, and then that Pegasus World Cup turf race, and subsequently the Munoz, the Turf Classic, and the Manhattan. Just comes in good form. Win streak of 5 starts now. 5 starts, 5 wins. For Bricks and Mortar, he's going to be the one to beat. He's going to take the action pretty clearly in there, and we'll see what he can do again against last year's winner, who was a barn mate, and some Europeans coming over that have some potential. But he just looks so freakishly good. I think it's going to go through Bricks and Mortar. Second race we'll take a look at is the Secretariat. It's always kind of fun. It is the 3-year-olds on the turf. If you listen to me enough, you know that I like that subdivision of runners, 3-year-olds on the turf. There's a series of races that start early in the year and continue, and this is one of those. Secretariat is a grade one event for $500,000, a mile on the grass. Van Beethoven comes in off some tries in Group One Company over in Europe for Aidan O'Brien. Now, they were 6th, 7th, and 8th in the last 3 starts, but again, this horse was facing top competitors over in Europe in Group One competition. Never No More, also for Aidan O'Brien, won a little stakes race over in Europe last time, but it was ungraded, so not quite sure what to make of that. Fog of War showed some ability early on and now has got kind of gotten back to that. But while we talk, going to take a look at the American Derby. Faraway Kitten, the number 3 horse, is going to get it done for Mike Maker. The American Derby being kind of the prep race for this Secretariat. So I think Faraway Kitten is a little bit interesting. Again, with the win over the course, number-wise might be a little bit light, however. Fog of War, valid point. The 2 Chad Brown runners probably have a little bit of an edge in here as far as the numbers, and that's probably the way the betting public will go. But again, with the win in the prep race, the Ken and Sarah Ramsey horse is a little bit interesting, Faraway Kitten. And in the Bev D, it's going to be Sister Charlie that will take some action coming out of a win in the Diana most recently up here at Saratoga. So again, that Beverly D, also a great grade one race on the card tomorrow with Sister Charlie coming in from a Saratoga start to be the probable favorite tomorrow at Arlington. So again, great card at Arlington as well as nice card up here at Saratoga. Just wanted to preview you on that a little bit. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, David O'Rourke, CEO and President of the New York Racing Association. We'll get a halftime report here at Saratoga right after this. Stay tuned.
Looking for a fantastic meal? Stop by Malcolm's, a unique farm-to-table restaurant experience. Located at 617 Union Street in Schenectady, Malcolm's offers locally grown fresh foods, mouth-watering flavors, an enhanced drink menu, and terrific service. Malcolm's is a sure bet during Saratoga season. Make your reservation today.
We'll be right back.
In a recent study of some of the top online wagering sites, Capital OTB won big in total player rewards, far surpassing some of the best-known wagering sites in America. While other rewards programs simply offer you points redeemable for gift cards, Capital OTB's rebates are paid to you in actual cash. Plus, Capital OTB gives you full and immediate access to your money. So if all you're getting now are points and gift cards, join Capital OTB Player Rewards today and get cash back. Visit CapitalOTBBet.com and sign up today.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Welcome back. As promised before the break, joined now by David O'Rourke, CEO and President of the New York Racing Association. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Happy to have you. Wanted to have you talk a little halftime. We've just passed the halftime point, and so I wanted a little update, some of the numbers and whatnot. Should start out saying first half of the meet, there were a couple of sad moments. One just a couple of days ago, Carmen Barrera, a longtime director of Horsemen's Relations, passed away unexpectedly. And as I came to the track yesterday, boy, a lot of people were talking about remembering her. And I think fans might not realize it, but saw her often down in the winner's circle. So you have somebody around like that for as long as she was around, the institutional memory and whatnot. Surely she will be missed at the New York Racing Association.
Yeah, it's been a tough year. We've lost two great women in racing this year. Carmen was part of the fabric of this place.
Yeah.
And, someone that I actually personally learned a lot from. Sometimes, 40 years, she's part of the history of this track.
That's why I say the institutional memory. You alluded to it as well. A few weeks ago, middle of the day, the announcement, I think, shocked a lot of people. Mary Lou Whitney passed away, and it was nice. There was a moment of silence, and the crowd applauded. The conversation in the next few days from everyone, the news media and the people, and I think a lot of people didn't realize how important she was, not just to the track and racing, but to the community as well. And I applaud Naira. You were very nimble and turning around quickly and making Whitney Day kind of a memorial to her. And then I think we have a shot, the clubhouse entrance area renamed the Mary Lou Whitney entrance. So a fitting tribute to, again, the word gets bandied around often, but with her, icon fits.
Mary Lou is the queen of Saratoga. No doubt. No doubt. But getting back to the numbers, where we are, we're doing well. Halfway through, we're up 320 versus 313. We lost a day. Actually, we lost a day and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah. A day and a half. And, as you get into August, it seemed like August came a week early with the Jim Dandy weekend. And, everything's rolling along and the weather's cooperating. And that's the key factor for us is, if we can stay on the turf, we're going to have a strong meet. It's half an outdoor venue, so everyone's a lot happier when it's not raining. And it's been really good. I mean, how's your experience been?
Well, I said it after the Whitney when I was in the winner's circle. I was talking to people, and subsequently, the weather is Saratoga weather. So there was the two funky situations with the heat canceling the day, and then that crazy monsoon that came down and affected the track and canceled half a day. But you subtract that and look at the racing has been phenomenal. And McKenzie and Covfefe and Concrete Rose, Sister Charlie at the beginning of the meet. I mean, we've had some monsters on the racetrack that have kind of validated what we expected. So the racing's been fabulous.
Yeah, it's been really good. It's been strong. We're looking forward to the Travers coming up. Bob's coming back with another good horse. It's going to be a great day. And, what can you say? It's Saratoga.
Yeah, talk about, I mentioned Whitney and McKenzie and Covfefe on the racetrack, very good. But, man, you guys knocked out of the park handle-wise. That was a record on Whitney Day.
Yeah, it was, right? Yeah. It's those days are getting stronger every year, too. I'm curious on what Travers Day is going to bring this year. Because you kind of hit, I don't want to call them plateaus, but you get past $30 million. It's tough to do a $30 million day. Travers, you're looking at 50. What's the next step on that? We want to find out. We stacked a lot of races on these days, so we have put our chips on the table in terms of the event structure.
Yeah,
and it's got to pay off.
Yeah. Travers Day, a great day of racing, and the, as I say, Whitney Day also with the two performances. But looking forward to the three-year-old, which have to sort themselves out. So I think that's going to be a lot of fun on Travers Day. Let's talk about some of the changes up here this year. And again, halfway through the meet, what your thoughts are. 1863 Club opened up. I was in opening day for lunch, enjoyed it. It's a great venue. We have a couple of shots, I think, that show the new venue. You're right on the rail. You can step out after you eat lunch and get right on the rail and watch some of the races. You're right on the trail out from the paddock to the track, so you can watch the horses going to the track as well. So you can see the upper two floors balcony. So great venue to watch the races from. What's the experience been from folks over the, again, first few weeks of the meet?
The feedback's been really good. We've been surveying customers, so we're getting an idea of what they like, what they don't like. It's, you know, we opened it up. The paint wasn't dry, literally. So, you know, we've worked through the operational hiccups in the first few weeks. There weren't many, but they're mostly behind the scenes. And it's interesting operating a building like this, because you've got a brand new building next to, I won't call it an ancient building, but a historic building. Yeah. And it's so much different on how they'll operate and the efficiencies that you can gain out of a building and the experience that you can deliver. You know, we're really happy with it. It fits in. I mean, from this side, once you step out,
absolutely,
the aesthetic works. But yeah, it's a good investment, and it's going to be here a long time.
Yeah, it, you know, replaces the tent and those trailers, but it brings the facility into a 21st century kind of mode, because has the boxes up on the top floor. Yeah. Had Sal Kumin in towards the beginning of the meet. He had one of those boxes, and he liked the experience. And I think, as I say, it just matches up with 21st century sporting venues.
Yeah, and then walking across from the box section into the building on the second floor across that bridge, it's kind of a cool experience. And one of the things we're looking at is, like, how do we liven that up even more and make that part of, because when you're at a track, at least for me, I like to move around a little bit. It's a long day.
Yeah.
So, you know, we might play with the format a little bit. We're going to have fun with the building. And then there's some potential for this building on the off season.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of a unique venue. It's a medium-sized venue. We might be able to help bring some business into the area for things that, you know, there might not be something that fits for what they're looking for. So, you know, we're excited.
And it's compared to the rest of the venue, it's essentially winterized, too.
It is, and it's outside the gate.
Yeah.
So it can be operated in an efficient manner in that sense.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the Fox MSG show, because every time I have somebody from Naira in, I tip my cap. I've had Acacia and Courtney in, and they're on the front side of the cameras, but certainly I see Eric walking around and talk to Andy and all the other folks and say, during the Saratoga meet, I'm here, obviously, but it's replayed a little bit later. As a guy who owned a television production company for a long time, I know the work that goes into it. I can appreciate that. But you were on the panel the other day at the Racing and Gaming, the Albany Law conference, and you mentioned television as being a way, hopefully, to, in the long term, pull new people in. And as you mentioned that, I reflected back. That's one of the ways I got into the game. And a lot of people my age will remember when cable TV first came in this area. That Channel 9 WOR show in New York, the afternoon, Saturday afternoon, Frank Wright and Charles C. Candy, you'd watch the last two races from the Naira track, and then a few hours later, over at Yonkers or Roosevelt, Stan Bergstein would come on for a half an hour, and you see three races there. And that kind of pulled me in. This is the 21st century version of that, I think.
Yeah, well, a lot of the, you know, we got into it slowly, but we'd been on MSG for 30 years with a replay show. And the format really hadn't changed. It was I guess it was when people would tape them, and then that's how people would handicap. But we had the time, and we had the slot, and the idea was, can we bring live racing? And then we gained some momentum pretty quick. You know, there's always some luck involved, too. And Fox picked up Saratoga, and now we have 500 hours, and we've got it out there, and it's a casual sports audience that we're trying to appeal to, as long and keep the handicapper involved. You know, it's a mix, and we believe that it's a way for us to get our sport you know, in the public eye, and it creates another platform for us. I mean, it's not dissimilar to what you guys are doing here. I mean, these are you got to get the content out there, and you know, once you get them come to the track, then they're converted. I mean, that's an easy sell up here, but you know, we run all year round, and this is a platform for us to diversify our revenue. I mean, because, you know, racing's economic model in the U.S. for the last 30 years has been handle, how's handle been? That equates to how business has been. And now that is a major component to what we do, but it's important for us to diversify and modernize our revenue structure as the game evolves. So that was sort of the point I was trying to make in the Albany Law Conference, was even OTBs, because that was the topic.
Yeah,
it doesn't necessarily need to be what it was.
Yeah.
What can it be going forward? And, you know, it's a very interesting asset, the OTBs in New York. And I think there's a lot of potential there. I just think we have to think about it a little bit differently than trying to revisit something.
Yeah, that was kind of the overarching point of that panel, it seemed like. Let's kind of step back and take a look at what worked 30 years ago and maybe now needs a little tinkering and a little tweaking. But, again, I think pulling new people into the game, the Fox MSG show does a great point doing that. And as you say, I think we try to do that here, because I think the rest of the year we're kind of preaching to the choir, I think. But up here at Saratoga, I think there's a lot of new fans who, hey, let's tune in the morning and get some picks and whatnot. I get trainers in here, and they can sit here for 10 or 15 minutes, so we get a little behind the scenes and get introduced, and I think that helps pull people in as well. Was that part of the impetus of the show? I knew you were instrumental in kind of kicking off the Fox MSG show, but was that part of the impetus? Hey, let's bring some new fans in with the crossover on a more mainstream sports network.
It's both. I mean, and to your point, I wouldn't, you know, preaching to the choir is quite important.
Oh, absolutely.
And that, you know, we have a very strong fan base and a very passionate one, if you read Twitter much. So it's how do you get the content in the way that they want to consume it? And you guys have done well. You have an app. I've seen it. It's very good. But it's getting it out there. You're bringing in new fans by being on the platforms that they're on. And you have to introduce people to our game. It's a very simple game in the fact of, you know, who's going to win, you know. But the betting, you know, there's the nuances. It's layered. So I think what we're doing with that format is we're introducing it in a way that's palatable to somebody who's not familiar with some of the vernacular that we can throw out here and there that they wouldn't even understand what we're talking about.
Yeah, and I tell people just what you've alluded to. Even if you aren't a racing fan, come up to Saratoga and walk around and people watch and enjoy the music in the backyard and pick your favorite numbers if you want to, or colors or whatever. Place a couple of bets, and sure enough, you'll get into it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's the fun of it. You talked about wagering. You introduced a new wager just the past couple of days, the Empire 6, the $20 pick 6, the jackpot edition that has become popular at various venues. Talk a little bit about the first couple of days of that, but maybe more importantly, a lot of moving parts when you make a change like that. And what was the thought process to make that change?
The thought process would be the research that we've done, and it's pretty obvious that bet is something that the public's been looking for. The low base amount, high potential payoff, but I don't want to call it the sacrifice, but giving up the $2 pick six wasn't an easy decision either. And we have these cross-country pick fours. You've noticed
that.
And if you're looking at it, it's on a separate card. And there's a reason for that. You can't intermingle them. And our primary card, and this gets into the plumbing of our system, because I want to explain why we don't have both.
Sure.
Because I really want to have both. And I think the 20-cent pick six, we wanted to launch it up here because we wanted to see, you know, this is when all eyes are on us. And we have the best opportunity to gather the data and see how it'll work out. So far, it's performing to pretty much what we were predicting. I think 129,000 in the
both
first
days.
Day.
It's funny. The handle was pretty identical to 2 days.
Yeah. And in fact, I thought it was a typo. But, you know, it's roughly double the non-carryover what we would expect on those days. So that's a good thing. And it's a 20-cent bet, so the entry point's lower. More people can get involved. But the $2 pick six is a kind of a high-stakes poker game in the way we view it. So going back to the separate card, our normal card through the tote system is automated. So everything that's supposed to occur occurs seamlessly. When you have a separate card, it requires a higher level of operational diligence on it. So to add another separate card bet, like the $2 pick six, to maintain it, would have there's slight operational risk involved. So what we're doing now is working with the tote company to automate that. And I really want to bring that bet back because it's a cool bet.
Oh, yeah.
It's a high-stakes poker game. There's a very specific client for that. But we we decided it wasn't worth the risk of messing one of them up, to be, you know, direct.
So there is the possibility that at some point both could go.
I want both.
Okay.
I think it's a different customer.
I think you're absolutely right.
You know, I just felt, and we felt, that we wanted to launch the Empire Pick 6 up here to really see if it works. It wasn't the best option to launch it right after the Whitney, but it was there. The window was there, and we're doing it. We have to try things.
Sure.
I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
No, I agree completely. I think the racing industry just in general is kind of slow moving, so I love it when there is kind of, hey, let's jump in and see what's what and kind of make some decisions. And as I say, the people out there may not realize, but there are a lot of moving parts to these decisions, so you really have to take your time in making those decisions, because it does affect a lot of the different aspects of the game. Speaking about knowing the game and different aspects, we're at a Q&A with you at the start of the meet, and you talked a little bit about becoming a little more involved with the horseman side of the game and the economics and whatnot. You said that was fun to kind of learn a new aspect of the game. How's that been working out?
It's good. In fact, we're just finishing up the first round. We're surveying the trainers and the owners, and the second phase will be focus groups. So right now it's in collecting the data, and you know, because we can think about, well, everyone's got a concept of what we think somebody wants, but this will give us a comprehensive way of collecting that information, and that way we can think about, well, how do we staff to that? How do we operate? What is the right level of concierge? What are the right level of amenities that when an owner comes here, they expect or want, or maybe they don't know what they want? How do we want to introduce them to the game? Because, you know, and the game's changing. Because, like, there was a horse the other day that, I'm trying to remember the name. It was a large syndicate. About 100 people in the winner's circle.
Oh, yes. I can't remember the name either.
I'm trying to remember which horse that was.
I don't remember the name either, but there was a...
Yeah, 100 people in the winner's circle. And I'm thinking that, well, this is great. You have 100 people, and they're all excited, and they all want to get in the picture. But, it can get dangerous, to be honest, for lack of a better term. So, and that's becoming a bigger part of the game. Yeah. So the thing is, how do we handle owners when they're here, give them that experience? And we really have to start thinking about syndicates and what the ownership is going to look like.
Yeah.
And it's good, because let's get ahead of it. Because if that's a great thing, to have 100 people excited in the winner's circle having a good time.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the best marketing thing I could ever have. But now I have to think about, well, do I need a bigger winner's circle? But then that's fine. But, you know, these are great challenges to have. We're going to get a lot smarter. And, you know, that is a big focus. It's a new part of the game I get to look at.
Yeah, one of the triangle of the racing organization, the fans and the owners, they're all equal participants, so should be get equal amounts of attention. And speaking of attention, before we let you go, your first summer up here as the CEO and president, and obviously you've been here for many years prior to that, but I have some shots of the backyard that I took over the past few days. Lots of people out there enjoying the backyard. You said you like to walk around.
I've seen you
walking around quite a bit.
Yeah.
Just give me some impressions. Your first summer up here as the lead guy and walking around the facility over the first 20-plus days.
You know, in essence, we're an entertainment product. And, you know, you have certain moments that you remember as you come out of the meet, because it becomes a blur a little bit. Whitney Day. Whitney Day felt like almost 2 days. you know, the governor came up, we had a great time.
Yeah.
He actually won his bet, which was cool.
And then, great picture of him holding up the winning ticket.
And then you have one of our largest race days right after that. And around 3 o'clock that day, I mean, and I didn't know what the attendance number, but in my mind, I looked around, there's like 35,000 people here, all having a good time.
Yeah.
I mean, how could you not have fun? I mean, in some ways, I feel like I got the best job in the world on moments like that. It's you know, Saratoga, like, people are here, it's racing. Even going back to that Albany Law Conference where people, you know, there's a lot of can it survive type, come out here on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Tell me this can't survive. I mean, this is—it's something to behold. It's awesome.
Yeah, one of the questions, one of the audience members said, how do we bring new people into the game? You kind of said, come over here.
Bring them to Saratoga.
You'll see plenty of them right over here. And as you said, you come here to the racetrack once, and you're kind of tied in forever. And certainly this is kind of where I cut my teeth years and years ago. And again, I think the Fox MSG show does a great job as well, kind of evangelizing in it to a much broader across the country kind of audience. So hats off again on that. David O'Rourke, President and CEO of the New York Racing Association. Again, just wanted to get a halftime report, and it seems like at halftime we're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah,
thank you.
And so congratulations on the first half. Good luck going forward, and down at Belmont and Aqueduct as well. Appreciate the visit.
Thank you for having me.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, more on Racing Across America on this Friday morning. Stay tuned.
Thanks, man.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Birdstone is an outside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
What if there was a way to become a better horse player, to have a better knowledge of the game, to be more successful? What if there were a way to take what you've learned, what you know, and make better decisions, better choices? In horse racing, knowledge is a powerful tool. Race results and replays, past performances and live streaming, wagering from all your digital devices. Capital OTB. Become a better horse player.
Welcome back. Thanks again to David O'Rourke, President and CEO of the New York Racing Association. Again, it seems like we're doing pretty well. Just past the halfway point up here at Saratoga, despite a little bit of funky weather, but handle is in a good spot. And again, Empire 6 is underway, the Fox MSG show clicking along nicely. So far, so good. And with the weather like this, if it continues, it's only going to get better. As promised, joined now by Sean Smealy, Executive Director, Coalition for Horse Racing Integrity. Good morning.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate being here.
I appreciate your being here. I should alert people that I have known Sean pretty much my whole life, since we were like in that, 9 to 13-year-old running around kid group that was at the local swimming pool. You went to the other high school. I went to the other high school. But in a place like Amsterdam, plenty of crossover, siblings of similar ages. Yep. So,
and we all shared one common thing, which was love for the racetrack.
Love for the racetrack. Me, I wind up the degenerate here handicapping horses on TV. You were down in Washington and worked in the Senate a few administrations ago in the White House for a while. But now with the Coalition for Horse Racing Integrity, working, I assume, closely with Representatives Tonko and Barr on their bill and whatnot. And we'll get into the mission in just a moment. But before we do that, we've already alluded to it. You've been a fan for a long time, coming to the track for as long as I have since we were kids, but also got involved on the ownership side in recent years. So you're not just somebody coming in from Washington. Give us your bona fides and talk a little bit about how you became a fan and how you got into the ownership.
Sure. Well, like many people, I was introduced to the sport by my grandfather, who brought me over here at an early age. And then as I got older and started making a little bit more money, I was introduced to my partner's good friend. They both went to West Point, Terry Finley. And he got me involved with a horse called Saratoga Russell, who won a couple times up here, and which was a great treat for us. And after that, I was hooked.
But it's okay.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
There's a good end to the story. Well, not the end. Good, hopefully, middle portion.
Yep.
Because you were in the winner's circle earlier at the meet. So Hey, winners always like to watch watch the races again. I pulled up the replay. Start of the meet, number one, Originator gets it done for the folks at West Point. I think we also have a shot of the winner's circle photo where I think I picked you out standing right behind Terry Finley, but you can see the black and yellow silks there of Originator. What were your feelings here early in the meet to be able to get it?
Well, right here was a spectacular because it looked like he bumps the horse, but then he makes two great moves. Right here to pull away from a very fast approaching eight horse. And, you know, there's nothing like when that horse crosses the finish line first and you're running down to the winner's circle and you're cashing big checks. I had my son up with me that weekend and we did the early pick five and that was race five and we keyed that horse. And so everything was riding on that race. So it was a great time. It was a wonderful time.
There's the winner's circle. Plenty of West Point folks. Yeah. Terry and Tommy Bellhouse. I think Rob Masiello.
Yeah, Rob's part of that.
Behind Tommy Bellhouse. And you're back there behind Terry Finley. So again, congratulations
there.
As
a lot of fun.
You're not just coming into this as an outsider. You've been playing the game in various capacities for a while now. So, give us the Coalition for Horse Racing Integrity. What's the mission of the organization?
So the mission is to try to take all the various 38 racing jurisdictions and put them under one unified, just for anti-doping purposes. Right now, each racing jurisdiction has their own rules, regulations, penalties, and it's a hodgepodge that really makes it hard to enforce, especially since most trainers now take their horses across state lines.
Sure.
And because of that, you know, it makes the game susceptible to cheating. And it's very hard. If you talk to trainers, they will tell you that they can't stand having to, it's almost like they have to be a chemist. They have to go across line, you know, what the withdrawal times are, et cetera. So privately, they're very supportive of having a uniform system. The other key thing is making it independent. So right now, some states have some restrictions on conflict of interest, but most do not. And so That really shows itself in the penalty phase. So if a trainer is caught either cheating or have an overage on a therapeutic drug, it's usually a slap on the hand. And or if they do something really bad, they can just take their tack and move to another state. And so that's what this bill is trying to get at. The whole thing on any great or good anti-doping program has to have deterrence as its main key. Also do work with the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, which would be brought into this effort. Their biggest deterrent is that they have out-of-competition testing. And right now, there's less than 1% of the tests for horse racing is out-of-competition. For human athletes, it's 60%. So you can imagine, if you are thinking about cheating as a human athlete, you're going to think twice because a tester can show up at your door any moment. In racing, it's an IQ test. If you know when you're going to be tested, which is at the end of the race, you know what you're going to be tested for, usually, and that the labs are sending the test to, some are accredited, some are not that good, there's a good incentive to cheat at that point. And also, there's also a culture. What happens is, if you think the other guy's cheating, you're going to be able to rationalize the ability to think, well, if he's cheating me, I should do a little bit too. We saw that in baseball. We saw that in the Olympic sports. People forget back in the early 2000s, U.S. were considered the biggest cheaters in Olympic sports. And at that point, they made a determination that the sports federations can no longer, you know, police their own. And so grudgingly, they said, okay, we'll put it into this independent organization, this U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, which is a private nonprofit. It's not a government agency. And within years, it became the most successful in the world. Because they had independent boards, no one from the USOC, the Olympic Committee, was on the board, no one who had an active financial interest around the board. So they were truly independent. And that makes the biggest difference. If you have an independent organization that's going to be in charge of the testing, there's a sense of fairness and a level playing field out there now. And people aren't incentivized to cheat. It's funny. If you went back to all the sports federations now, U.S. Track and Field, USA Swimming, and said, hey, we made a mistake. We're going to give this back to you. They would say, no way. We don't want it. They're so you couldn't pay them enough money now to take it back. So I think it's a hard thing to accept, but I think you know, especially in times like now, I think it'd be really smart for the industry to embrace this independent model.
And as I mentioned earlier, there was a presser over on the front side just about a week or so ago with Representative Tonko, who represents our area, but Representative Barr from Kentucky, also part of this bill, which is H.R. 2651, if you type that into
Google.
Well,
that's the old number. 1754 is the new number.
Okay, 1754.
And there's a Senate bill now, S-1820.
Okay. Yeah. So again, that's what you're behind, these bills from Tonko.
Yes, and we're making great strides. So we have about 140 co-sponsors in the House. For the first time, we've got a Senate bill introduced by Senator Gillibrand from New York and Martha McSally from Arizona, Republican. So we're making great strides. The chairwoman of the House committee that has jurisdiction over this bill has said that she wants to have a hearing on the bill in the fall and then a markup afterwards. We think that when we get through that process, it'll be easy to pass the House. We got a stiffer challenge in the Senate. Senator McConnell, who's neutral on our bill, has Churchill Downs in, obviously, in his state, and they're against the bill. And you have, but you also have all the breeders who are very strongly supportive of it. So, you know, our group has the, you know, Jockey Club, the Breeders' Cup, the Water Hay Oats Alliance, which Stacey and Arthur Hancock started, a grassroots movement that really has propelled us. We work with all the sane animal welfare groups who want to see racing continue, but don't want to see it, you know, they want to be more humane to the horses. And a number of tracks to support it. So David, your previous guest, is supportive of what we're doing. The Stronach Group is supportive. Keeneland's in our coalition. So we have a lot of industry support in what we're doing. And, you know, not many industries go to Congress and say, regulate us, right? And the reason that we are at this point is for over a decade now, probably longer, the industry has tried to police itself. And what you find out is you can't promote and police at the same time. It's very difficult. And they put together the National Uniform Medication Program. Only a quarter of the racing states have signed on to all four pillars of it. So it's something that I think needs to be imposed. There's no, you know, federal government of racing now. There's no department of racing now. This still remains a sort of a state and local entity, but you just have the authority on anti-doping and anti-doping alone given to this private nonprofit entity, which will also have board members from the industry. You'll have vets on there, you'll have people from breeding, you'll have people from, you know, all facets of racing involved on it. So we think, you know, we've spent a lot of time putting this bill together. We think this is the answer that will solve this problem. There is no commissioner of racing, as you well know. So if you had a commissioner racing like baseball, they can make an edict and make it happen. That can't happen in this industry. There's no central authority to do this. So that's why Congress has to do it. And like I said, no one really wants to go to Congress and have them do this type of thing, but it really is the only way to make it happen.
You've kind of alluded to it. I mean, there's a split in the industry. There are horsemen and groups that are for the integrity bill. There are horsemen and groups that are against it. And a lot of them, you've kind of alluded to this, a lot of them say, do we want the federal government overseeing what we do? A lot of people have said it would be nice if racing had a racing commissioner. Yeah. But this doesn't really address a racing commissioner type of thing. But how do you answer that? You've kind of talked about it already, the folks who say, do we want the federal government to oversee what we're doing?
Yeah, so I think this is probably a step in that direction. But this entity will have nothing to do with any other parts of racing by design. I don't think it should be. I think the industry should come together at some point if they want to have a strong, healthy future. I think they realize that there are forces sometimes out of their control that can really impact the future of the business. So, I mean, listen, the way this bill is set up is, you know, there's no taxpayer funding. Each state will determine how the costs will be apportioned out. I mean, listen, there are some states that have very good programs. They just need uniformity, such as, you know, California. New York's another good program. But if you had the uniformity and if you had an independent operation making sure that every part of the racing is living up to those standards, it's really not going to be that hard. And once you thing is that, you know, one thing's for sure, these horses are going to be less medicated, right? So if you have more, you know, oversight of what medication these horses are taking, the result is there's going to be less medication. You know, obviously, one of the big issues our bill addresses is race day medications, no race day medication. That is the international standard. North America is the only place in the world that allows a horse to have a needle in its neck right before a race. And that should be obvious to everybody why that's important. But Lasix is a very controversial issue. Horses, from what all the studies I've read, about 5 to 7% of horses bleed enough to impact their racing, yet 95% of horses take Lasix. And why is that? Because it's a proven performance enhancer. You lose 30 pounds of weight a horse runs, and if you're a trainer and your horse isn't a bleeder, but you know the two horses next to him are taking Lasix and they have a 30-pound weight advantage, you're going to give them Lasix. I mean, that's just common sense. And yes, horses do need Lasix. Some horses do. But, Europe and other places have found ways to get, you know, to do it without sticking a needle in their neck. And I think that's where we should go. That will bring more integrity back into the game. Obviously, that's a big sticking point for the number of trainers. But I think you'll see that's changing a lot. You may see pretty soon a number of prominent trainers come out in favor of our bill. A lot of former racing commissioners have been supportive of what we're doing. So I get why, you know, no one likes change, right? No one likes change. But if your sport is in a state of crisis, it's time to look inwardly and think, what are the things we can do? To me, this is an easy one.
Well, you say state of crisis, and that was going to be my next question. Given what we've seen in California earlier this year, which obviously has affected the racing industry as a whole, will this impact that in a positive way?
Yes, most definitely. And here's how. Right now, there's almost no regulation of therapeutic medications while horses in training. So all these horses out here right behind us, we have no idea what kind of bute they're taking. We know how much can be in their system by the time they race, right? But we have no idea, you know, that month or two when they're not racing, what's in there. And what can happen is if a trainer wants to get his horse ready, maybe they juice up the bute. Horse runs thinking it's healthy, extends itself. A good portion of the breakdowns at tracks happen in the training. There's, you know, almost every horse is on the track at some point. So I think this will directly address that because it'll give this new horse racing anti-doping authority the authority to, without a competition testing everything else, to monitor and limit the amount of therapeutic drugs that go into a horse, and obviously any of the, you know, performance enhancing drugs too.
The website horseracingintegrity.com, so people can go there and get some more information. As you say, the bill number 1754, type that into Google and people can read for themselves. Yeah. As I said, I looked at the previous bill before, and it's also, there's a little summary there that people can just get the summary of if people want to learn more about the Horse Racing Integrity Act as well.
Right.
And anything that you would advise people to do if they're invested in the issue?
Yes. If you care about the future of racing, please contact your senator, congressman. In your capital district, you got a great champion in Paul Tonko, who's already leading the way. But encourage your friends and other people from across the country to get them to co-sponsor this bill. We'll get this bill through. And I think we'll look back in, you know, 3 or 4 years and say this was the right thing to do.
Sean, appreciate the visit and the thoughts. As I say, there are different camps on this, and we'll see how it works out. As you say, it looks like things will progress down in Washington over the next few months.
So we'll certainly
be watching. And as I say, people can check out more, horseracingintegrity.com. Appreciate the visit and the thoughts on the act, and also congratulations on the winner, sir.
Yeah, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Sean Smealy, Executive Director, the Coalition for Horse Racing Integrity. Thanks also earlier to David O'Rourke from the New York Racing Association and trainer John Kimmel. Friday morning, Racing Across America in the books. Don't forget, we're back tomorrow morning, Racing Across America. That's it, not Racing Across America. Brian Netto on with Saratoga's at the Spa and the Handicappers Report at 9 a.m. So kick it off at 9 with the Handicappers Report, Brian at 10 tomorrow on a good Saturday here at Saratoga. All afternoon long, Mike Callahan will be in with the cut-ins for the bankroll, so stay tuned for that as well right here on the network tomorrow. Today, beautiful day at Saratoga. If you don't have plans, head up to the track, because it's going to be a gorgeous day with some great racing. Hope to see you up here as far as the network. We'll see you tomorrow morning.
You've been watching Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Racing Across America has been brought to you by CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier online wagering site in New York State. CapitalOTBBet.com. Sign up today. Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga, just minutes from the track. The Leah Auto Group. To search their inventory, schedule a service appointment, or find a dealership near you, visit leahcars.com. Leah Cars for life. Woodbine Racetrack. Pick, bet, and cheer on world-class horse racing north of the border. And the new Capital OTB mobile app. Wager anytime, anywhere. Download it free from the iTunes Store or Google Play.